Greetings, everyone, on this cool Sabbath, but very warm in here. In more ways than one, I hope. When I used to travel to my grandmother's house, I remember a plaque on her kitchen wall had a little saying, little picture there, and it says, "The reason the dog is man's best friend is because he wags his tail instead of his tongue." And I guess that's true. You know, dogs are just so accepting of us, all our faults. You know, they just look right at you, and no matter what you say, they just want to be your friend. The Bible depicts the tongue as a most unruly and difficult organ to tame, and in its wild state is even dangerous. We've all seen that in our culture today. Loose lips can indeed sink ships. Someone once said, "Remember, your tongue is in a wet place and it can slip easily." Well, oftentimes, how many times have we said something and wish I had not said that, you know? And kids say, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." Well, like so many fables, that one's false as well. Words can hurt, and they can actually kill. According to this proverb, as a matter of fact, the chapter, has a lot to say about our tongue, how we interact with those around us, and how we should. And it's very instructive, I think, just to read it. Proverbs 18, and here I am in Psalms. So used to turning to Psalms. 18 and verse 21, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof." Very important that we realize that our words are strong, and they can be good, and they can be damaging as well. What we say to a child in the moment of anger, you know, or disgust or whatever, can have a detrimental effect on children. I don't know, each of us can remember angry words maybe that were said to us as a child, and here we are, you know, adults, we can still remember how it hurt. It can scar us for life. At the least, critical words can hurt. A gal at my office took a job somewhere else, and another employee in the next office made the comment, "Well, she was never an asset to this organization anyway." Well, she got wind of it, and I heard her tell that three or four times to different people. It really hurt for someone to say that. You know, we're all trying to do a good job, and someone who would criticize like that, I guess he was trying to get even for something. I don't know. But Proverbs 18:8, as long as we're here, "The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly." So words have a very powerful effect on us. What we say can not only hurt, but can be very destructive. You know, they say that angry words are a way of hitting somebody without using the fists. Watch the body language sometime when someone really gets, what they say, chewed out. And just watch and see how much it hurts to go through that, how deeply it can cut. And it's something we as Yahweh's people always have to be aware of. Now, just as important as what we say is in how we say it. Have you ever had someone like a boss or a teacher reprimand you in such a way that you hardly realized you were being corrected? Until later you think, "Oh, I see what they're trying to say. They're trying to get me to, you know, whatever they wanted me to do." They didn't have to hit me over the head with it. Their use of diplomacy was just almost amazing. Their tact was so skillful that they got the point across without ruffling a single feather. You know, Yahshua used the same skills, and his was unmatched as well. Now, there at times, he did get very angry. You know, he got so frustrated with the scribes and the Pharisees that, you know, he would call them whited sepulchers and snakes, and hypocrites come right out, you know, because they deserved it. And sometimes it's deserving, it's needed. But his use of parables, and if you ever look at the parables and how he brings in a point kind of obliquely, you know, not directly on, but in a way that would make you think and try to put the message together, it's very amazing how he did that. He put a great deal of thought into what he said and before he said it. You know, we could alleviate probably 90% of our problems if we even just took that to heart. If we just stop and think before we speak, you know, before we say something, ask yourself, how will what I'm about to say be received, and what effect will it have? Will it have the right effect that I want it to have? You know, if my wife's wearing an awful pair of clogs or something, instead of saying, oh, those are so, did you get those things off? Those things are terrible. I would say something like, you know, that red pair of shoes that really look good on you. You know, and not only show her that complimenting, number one, but two, switch the behavior without, you know, directly hurting her feelings. Because I know she didn't put them on to hurt my feelings. At least I hope not. James said, if you can master your tongue, you're indeed a perfect saint. The tongue is a tattletale, you might say, and it tells what's in our heart. Joshua said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So the tongue is the great revealer of what's inside. A faith which doesn't change the way people speak, the way they communicate, is no faith at all. Because what we say is the mark of our innermost self. And it should be a proper measure of, you know, Yahweh's spirit working in us. Well, the book of James, you probably know, has a lot to say about this subject. The issue of what we say and how we say it, and the problems that could arise one way or the other, is of great concern to James. He seems to, in fact, every chapter of his book deals with it in at least one place. He's very concerned. He spends a large portion dealing specifically with the matter of the tongue. I think we can all learn from it. He teaches that the true worshiper will manifest the truth, first of all, in the way they live. And people are watching us. You know, you don't realize how much they watch us. It's almost like we're in a glass cage or a fish tank or something. And everybody's got their eyes on us. They want to see, does this person really live what he says? Or is he just another hypocrite out there somewhere? Well, it will show up by the way that we endure trials, as we see in chapter 1. How do we react when we're under pressure? You know, people wonder, why am I faced with these problems all the time? My neighbor, he doesn't give a hoot about anything spiritual, and yet he doesn't have the problems I have. Well, that's part and parcel of being a follower of Yahweh. You're tested to see, you know, what's inside of you, and will you grow in spirit? Will you grow in strength through these trials? Well, it shows up in the way that they overcome temptation. It'll show up in their obedience to the Scripture, by their loving concern for the needy without being partial in any way, which is discussed in chapter 2, faith works issue. By the way, Martin Luther didn't like James, didn't want it in the Bible, called it an epistle of straw, and his 1522 German translation of the New Testament completely cut it out. He didn't like this book, mainly because it also talks about the law. And he didn't like that either, and that works are important as far as the faith works issue goes, and that didn't fit in with his understanding. So, but it's there. It's there for our admonition. In chapter 2, verse 14, we read, "What does it profit, my brethren, though a man say that he has faith and has not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, you be warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what does that profit? What good is that? Even so faith, if it has not works, is dead, being alone." So it's all part of the obedience that we submit ourselves to under Yahweh. And it's important that we remember that Yahshua did show us a way to walk, a way to live our lives. And it's important that we do that. In James 1:26, though, I want to look here. He says, "If any man among you seem to be religious and bridles not his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is vain." He's basically a gossip. He's going around, you know, has got a problem with gossip, backbiting, whatever it might be. So that's also important. I want to look at the way we talk, really, is one of the most important manifestations of how we live our life in Messiah, one of the most difficult of all aspects of our lives to manage. How often as we said, I wish I could take that back. What is it? Three things don't come back, come not back, the old proverb says. shot arrow, the missed opportunity, and the spoken word. You can't get them back once they're gone. So it's important that we think first. And how often have we all done that? It's a common human affliction. We speak before we think. You know, foot and mouth disease, as they say. We respond out of emotion. If we just stopped and thought a minute, and wait a minute, you know, let's think here. Let's analyze this and not instantly react. Well, it's hard and it's difficult, especially in times when we're under stress. But it's something we need to work on if we have a problem with that. James 1:19 says, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be slow to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." Now, why does he bring this out? Slow to speak can mean think before you speak, you know, analyze it, think about it. Or it could also mean, does it need to be said at all? You know, before you say anything, maybe you ought to stop and consider first, and maybe it'd be best not to say anything. That's two different interpretations of that. But why doesn't he just talk about the heart? You know, the heart is really what we're all talking about here. The mouth just responds to what's ever in the heart. The mouth is a indicator. Well, in Hebrew, thought and language, which is, we know, very symbolic, poetic, the focus is often on the guilty member. For example, we read about feet swift to shed blood. Well, it's not the feet that are shedding blood, as if they're the culprits in a murder or something. But in the Hebrews' desire for concrete expression, they often spoke of a member of a body as if it were, you know, the acting part. Similarly, he uses mouth and tongue as an extension of the heart. Psalm 64:3, let's turn there real quick. Hold your place in James, we'll be here in a minute. 64:3 is interesting because it parallels the tongue with an arrow. And it brings out an interesting point. Why does it do that? Psalm 64 and verse 3. "Who whet their tongue like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the perfect. Suddenly do they shoot at him and fear not." Well, basically, you know, the tongue is deadly because it can do damage even from a distance. And we all know that. Someone starts a rumor and all of a sudden, you know, everybody knows about it. Goes around like crazy. Usually if it's bad news. Good news, you know, hardly ever goes anywhere, but bad news, you know, you can call across town. They already know about it 5 minutes later. But that's just the human nature. But it's like an arrow, and you can, you know, it's each of us carries around a concealed weapon, and all we have to do is open our mouth and we'll display it. You know, the tongue is very powerful. The fool is always displaying it and constantly getting himself into trouble. The wise man uses his tongue, wisely and only when necessary. The nurse puts her thermometer under your tongue, at least they used to. You know, now they got everything electronic, but to get your physical temperature, James says that your tongue will give your spiritual temperature. You know, quiet people, I found, are kind of hard to decipher. You know, the talkative person chattering all the time, you know what's in their mind, you know what's going on inside. And we by nature have a tendency to gravitate toward the talkers because there's no mystery there. They're transparent. You know, what they're thinking will eventually come out. But the quiet person is a little different, and you wonder what he's thinking, what's going through his mind, you know, and you're kind of reluctant to interact. But sometimes it's wise. It's not always, you know, smart to be a loose-lipped person. There's a line that's easily crossed from good judgment, really, to foolishness. Shakespeare said it's the empty vessel that makes the most noise. And some people with hollow heads, you know, make a lot of noise and don't really say anything. In Proverbs 18:7, it said, "A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul." What happened back in Genesis and the first sin that was committed by our ancestors? What happened when Eve was looking at the garden and thinking about what Yahweh had said, perhaps? and the serpent, the Nakash, the whisperer, which is the Hebrew for that, serpent, came along, and he said unto the woman in verse 4 of chapter 3, well, let's back up. I guess we better start at verse 1. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field. You see, if you want to be effective, you got to think about what you're going to say. And he is the most effective of all in getting us to sin. He was more subtle. He was more wise before he entered the debate than any beast of the field which Yahweh had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, has Elohim said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden. And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree, which is in the midst of the garden, Elohim has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, you shall not surely die. I don't know what kind of emphasis he put on it, but he was very convincing. And he knew how to persuade her. For Yahweh knows that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes will be opened. You shall be as mighty ones, knowing good and evil. So he plays on her desire to be somebody, to have power, to have authority, to be, you know, supernatural. So that plays on human emotion like you wouldn't believe. So she looked at the tree, saw it was good for food. It was pleasant to the eyes, tree to be desired, to make one wise. She took of it. She took of it and ate it and broke the commandment. Then in verse 12, after Yahweh had said, well, who told you that you were naked and have you eaten the tree? And the man says, notice his response. The woman that you gave me. I'm in the wrong verse here. Let's see. Voice of the garden. They heard the voice of Yahweh walking in the garden, verse 8, the cool of the evening. Adam said to his wife, hide. They hid themselves, and Yahweh called unto Adam, and he said, I was afraid because you were naked, and he said, you've eaten of the tree, and I commanded you. And he said, the woman, verse 12, that you gave, I guess I was there, whom you gave to me to be with me, she gave me the tree of the tree, and I did eat. We find that the first sin after the very first sin, after the fall that was brought on by that sin, was slandering Yahweh. It's your fault. You gave me that woman. She caused me to sin. See how powerful the tongue can be? What did the woman say? Well, that serpent, he caused me to sin. Of course, as the old joke goes, the serpent didn't have a leg to stand on. So he couldn't blame anybody. But she's the problem, and then he's the problem, and that's the problem. And, you know, wives are good at that, I hear. It's always the husband's fault. Well, the husbands do the same thing, too. They blame their wives for this and that. But that's the way we are as human beings. We don't ever like to take responsibility. When the Apostle Paul characterizes the fallenness of man, when he wants to describe the wretchedness of man in his sinful condition, he hones right in on what? Romans 3:13. Right in on what? The tongue. Because it reveals the heart. And it's hard to know a heart, but it's easy to decipher what someone has said. Romans 3:13. Their throat is an open sepulcher, and with their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. A lot of problems there. Destruction and misery, verse 16, are in their ways, and the way of peace have they not known. There is no fear of Elohim before their eyes. This is the carnal man. This is the guy who has no regard for anything righteous. And he's got a mouth problem. He says their throats are open graves. Their tongues practice deceit. Now, they'll tell you anything. We've all dealt with them. Out in the world, you know, you call up somebody and want them to do something for you. And what do? They lie to you. I'll be there tomorrow. 3 weeks later, you're still waiting, if you're, you know, patient enough to wait that long. Or they'll say they'll do this or that, but they don't plan to do that. That's the ways of the world, and we've all dealt with that. Not just, in any regard. As long as you are happy, they'll come out and lie right to your face. Well, Paul characterizes this as the natural man, and in Proverbs 18:21 it says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue," which we saw. So, the focal point of our depravity in this world of the nature of man is his false communication. When Isaiah confessed to Yahweh, he said, "I am a man of unclean lips." You remember that? He sees Yahweh's throne high and lifted up. What does he think about first? "I can't communicate righteously with him. I have got unclean lips." And the angel says, "I'll take a coal and I'll clean those lips." Nothing marked a man's sinfulness more than his mouth. A dirty mouth is the depravity of the lowest order. And that being the case, right words would be a manifestation of a righteous life, wouldn't it? That's what James is saying here. In chapter 3, he calls to measure our speech against our faith. How does it measure up? Controlling the tongue is really essential to a proper walk, and there's five compelling reasons why. Number one, James calls us to control the tongue because its potential to condemn is so great. Verse 1 and 2, let's start there. "My brethren, I'm focusing on chapter 3. Be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation." He's warning. He's saying, look, if you want to be a leader, you want to be a spokesman, a minister, whatever, watch it. Because whatever comes out of your mouth is going to be indelibly marked on you, and it better be right. Because if it's not, you shall receive a greater condemnation. "For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body." So he says, don't be many teachers, knowing that the judgment is very severe on those who may not speak rightly. We all stumble. He's discussing that here, but the text is what they say or don't say, because it's critical that what is spoken is true. You know, you have to be careful what you say. Many people aspire to teach without knowing the consequences involved, knowing what's really involved or the dangers involved. And I've heard so many wacky things. People come, you know, ask us questions. "Well, I heard somebody say this. You know, it's such off-the-wall stuff, you wonder where they get it. It's certainly not in the scriptures." But they say it anyway, for whatever reason, trying to impress or get a following. I don't know what it is. But they certainly haven't studied. And that's one of the warnings here, is that be careful and make sure that you know what you're doing. They have to be dedicated to the word and have the right motives. Well, he says there are those who love their honor, they love recognition, you know, they love their power, their prestige. And Yahshua condemns this in Matthew 28. But they didn't love the word, and that is where the problem begins. They loved everything else but. So having introduced the subject on the level of teaching, you know, speaking, because that's what teachers do, basically, communicate, we go to a discussion more generally for everyone and everybody's speech. Look at verse 2. "For in many things we offend all." We offend, you know, if we could just see us from Yahweh's eyes, we would just shake our heads. All the things we do that are wrong. We're always offending. Offending him, offending our brethren, offending anybody. We all do it. "If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body." I don't know if anybody is perfect. Do you? I mean, I'd like to meet this person other than Yahshua, of course. But if you can do that, if you can bridle the tongue, man, you've got a perfect person there. Because, remember, what he's saying proceeds out of his heart. If he's perfect in his communication, he's got a perfect heart. So we stumble in many ways, and the mouth is certainly one of them. The word here is offend, which is a substitute for the word sin, really. And it means to stumble, a moral collapse, a failure to do what's right. An offense against Yahweh is the whole idea of this, and we all do it. And the tongue is the dominant way in which we fail. The Bible refers directly and indirectly to a wicked tongue, a deceitful tongue, a lying tongue, a perverse tongue, a filthy tongue, a corrupt tongue, a bitter tongue, an angry tongue, a crafty tongue, a flattering tongue, a slanderous tongue, a gossiping tongue, a backbiting tongue, a blaspheming tongue, a foolish tongue, a boasting tongue, a murmuring tongue, a complaining tongue, a cursing tongue, a contentious tongue, a vile tongue, a tale-bearing tongue, a whispering tongue, an exaggerating tongue. On and on and on it goes. Did you see yourself anywhere there? I saw myself there several times. No wonder Yahweh put our tongue in a cage behind our teeth to kind of contain it, you know, because, you know, walled in by your mouth because it's so loose and willing to jump out at the wrong times and say the wrong things. The easiest way to sin is to sin with your tongue. Think about it. Maybe circumstances aren't right to commit other types of sin, but you can say anything you want, anytime you want, and so many do. The sin is always there waiting to be committed by the mouth. And that's why he said it's so dangerous and so important that we consider the subject, because oftentimes we don't think. Over in Matthew 12, verse 33, Yahshua is speaking here and in a parable type way in which he commonly did. And he says, whoever speaks against the Holy Spirit, it shall not be forgiven him, neither in this world, neither in the world to come. I find that interesting that, you know, you can speak against Yahshua, but when you speak against the Spirit, which is the direct extension of Yahweh himself, that will not be forgiven. He says, verse 33, I'm in 12:33 of Matthew, either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. It's going to be one or the other. You can't have part good and part bad. It's going to be one or the other. O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You want to know what's in somebody's heart? Just sit around for a while and listen. It'll come out eventually. Because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. But I say unto you that this is very sobering, every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. Wow. It's very important that we be careful about our words. Your eternal destiny can be determined by what you say. It's easy for Yahweh to recall what you said, any word you said in your lifetime. He knows it. Scientists say that, kind of like, have you ever gone outside at night and shined a flashlight up into the sky? And of course it doesn't hit anything, so you don't see anything. But they say that light goes forever. It'll just keep on traveling. It's very faint, of course. It'll just keep on going forever and ever. I guess till, if there is an end of the universe, and the Bible says there isn't. So it just goes on and on and on. They say the same thing happens with sound waves. I guess they become weaker and weaker and weaker. But virtually, they go on in an endless journey through space. So it's no problem if you have the right machinery, you know, and sensitive enough, you can pick it up and replay it all. And Yahweh has the right machine. He can pick it up and replay everything that we have said in our lifetime. He can recreate every word every person ever spoke. And it's frightening, if you think about it. Now, the only people who don't sin with their mouth are either mute or they're perfect people. I haven't met too many perfect people, but we're striving for that perfection. And we don't always make it. And we get up and we try again. We try again. Over in John chapter 46. Interesting, you know, we mentioned Yahshua as he was very, very diplomatic, very tactful when the situation needed to be. But in John chapter 7, they're talking about arguing here about Yahshua. And they would have taken him, verse 44, but no man laid hands on him. Then came the officers of the chief priests and Pharisees, and they said unto him, why have you not brought him? And the officer said, never a man spoke like this man. Imagine if you sat there listening to Joshua. Imagine your mind just opened up. Imagine something like you've never experienced before. Your understanding was crystal clear, and you could understand what he was saying, and opened up a whole new universe out there to your mind. But he also spake very, very well, and very clearly, and very meaningfully. And of course, they said to the Pharisees, well, are you also deceived? I mean, nobody can be like that, you know. Of course, they're going to belittle it. But there was no sin in his life, which means there was no guile in his mouth. You could trust every word he said. The closer we become to Yahshua's perfect nature, the more righteousness we reflect from our mouth, from our lips. A perfect man will not only be righteous in his speech, but in everything he does, in the way he lives. If you can control that greatest single sinning member of that you own, you're going to have control over the less sinning members as well. The tongue is the leading indicator of sin or lack of it in one's life. It's the instant expression of the heart, you know, and some people are so willing to open up their hearts. And that can be good, and that can be endearing, and it can also be dangerous, and they say too much. It's the way, really, that we communicate. The tongue is a powerful monitor of depravity as well, and that's the danger. So this says to me, if I want to reflect Yahshua's life, I've got to watch my mouth. I've got to watch what I say and how I communicate. And be careful. If through the Spirit you control the most volatile, the most potent member, the rest of your self will be subdued. So if we focus on that, and that's what I like to do that today, is focus on the most damaging part, then the rest should come along. Over in Psalm 39, verse 1, says, I will guard my ways that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth as with a muzzle. So it's constantly, and something we always have to remember is to watch our mouths, because we could be doing some damage, even not really intending to, you know, we do it. Sometimes we say something to somebody and later on find out that person got offended. And what? Why are you offended? Well, something you said. What was that? You know, well, necessarily wasn't even what you said, but maybe the way you said it. I mean, who knows? But it's very difficult to keep a muzzle, keep our mouth trained and under control. Well, let's go back to James then in chapter 3, verse 3, to help us understand what we just read in Psalm 39. Let's go back to verse 3. And I meant to ask Naomi about this, because they use an illustration, Paul does here. And he says, behold, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. I've seen a bit, and it seems to have a little thing that comes in, and it kind of goes around like this. And I'm wondering, does that hit the tongue? And it does. So, interestingly, James uses this to show that when you guide a horse, you're also guiding his tongue as well through the bit in his mouth. So that's very interesting. You put a piece of metal in a horse's mouth, you put a halter over his head, and you put a harness, I guess, you know, around that. And he takes some reins, and you can pull him around anywhere. Make him do anything you want. And that's what he's saying here. Once you have control over it, it's very easy then to control. Good illustration. And then he uses another one, verse 4. Behold also ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor lists. You know, they say if you see a ship up against a dock, I mean, I'm talking about like a cruise ship, you can actually lean up against that if you're on the dock and move that ship a little bit, maybe just minutely, but you can do it. And they say that with just a little rudder, some guy, you go up into these steering, what do you call it, bridges or whatever, where the captain is. Mm-hmm. He's steering these monstrous ships with just a little device. Just amazing what it takes. Little it takes to move something like that. Something that weighs, 100,000 tons. And you can do it. So James says, behold also the ships. Even though they're great, they can be guided by a small little helm. Little rudder on the back. Doesn't take much. Verse 5, even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindles. He kind of sums it up here. It can do great things. It can do lots of things. It can tear down. It can tear down assemblies. Seen that happen. It can wreck a marriage. It can devastate a family. Be careful. It's a powerful weapon. It can rip up a nation. It can lead to murder. A tongue. It can create, on the other hand, love, enthusiasm, encouragement, comfort, peace, joy. Powerful thing that tongue is, it can do so much. And if we get a hold of it and control it, we can control the rest of us too. James 1:26 says, if your speech doesn't reflect your faith is useless. Well, then in verse 5, he ends this one here, talking about kindling a fire. Kindling a fire. And so the tongue, verse 6, is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defiles the whole body, and it sets on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of Gehenna. My goodness, what is this all about? This is probably the most profound statement in the scripture, the most powerful. Fire, a forest fire. You can take a little cigarette, flip it out the window, next thing you know you got hundreds, maybe thousands of acres on fire. You can't do other, a cup of water. You can't throw it out there and all of a sudden you got a flood. But fire will spread and it'll go and it'll go and it'll go and it'll go. If you have a match, you can light a forest fire and burn down a whole city, because fire has a way of multiplying and multiplying and multiplying. The tongue is not like water. It's like fire. What it says can set a whole forest blazing, spiritually speaking. The tongue is a fire. Proverbs 16:27, it says, an unrighteous man digs up evil, and in his lips there is a burning fire. So it's there destined on destruction to cause problems. Everything his fiery mouth touches is set on fire, and the fire spreads. Proverbs 26:20 says, where no wood is, there the fire goes out. So it's got to have something that keeps it rekindled all the time. And that's where those that just revel in gossip keep the fire going. And it goes on and on. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceases, it says. You take away the fuel and the flame goes out. You take away the cooperative, the cooperating, and the tale will cease. The same Proverbs in a passage in verse 21 says, but as coals are to burning coals and wood is to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. And the word kindle means to burn up, of course. The picture, again, is of gossip and slander and contention being a fire that devastates. And it does. It can do so much damage. And I've always thought this is rather unjust, but if someone sues you for, you're innocent, you're completely innocent, but you're sued, a suit has been filed against you, you're tainted by that. In the same way, if someone arrests you for something, a cop arrests you, and you're thrown in jail, and you're completely innocent, you're still tainted by that. And you're innocent, and it's not right. It shouldn't happen. But you see, the same thing happens with gossip. It goes out, maybe the guy's completely innocent. We've all done that. We've all thought maybe the worst of something and found out we were wrong. But if we had gone and perpetuated that false notion, we could really be in dire straits, having done a lot of damage for someone who's innocent. In Psalm 52:2, thy tongue devises mischiefs like a sharp razor working deceitfully. A sharp razor. Boy, I'll tell you, it doesn't take much to cut yourself on a razor. That's a fascinating picture too. the tongue is a sharp razor. And also says in verse 3, you love evil more than good and lying rather than to speak righteousness. You love all devouring words, O you deceitful tongue. You deceitful tongue. And then it says we're going to be judged by Yahweh. Yahweh will destroy thee forever. Yahweh will judge those whose damage is done through their wagging tongue. I saw this quote, this man, a sports writer for an Atlanta newspaper, made an interesting statement. He says, I am more deadly than the screaming shell from a howitzer. I win without killing. I tear down homes. I break hearts. I wreck lives. I travel on the wings of the wind. No innocence is strong enough to intimidate me. No purity pure enough to daunt me. I have no regard for truth. No respect for justice, no mercy for the defenseless. My victims are as numerous as the sands of the sea and often as innocent. I never forget and seldom forgive, and my name is Gossip. My name is Gossip. And that's why Proverbs chapter 10, verse 19 says, he who restrains his lips is wise. Don't feel the fire. Well, let's go back again to James chapter 3. I want to get this chapter done, I hope. One way or the other. But James chapter 3 and verse 6. The Jerusalem Bible says, the tongue is a flame that, referring to verse 5, among all the parts of the body, the tongue is a whole wicked world in itself. It infects the whole body, catching fire itself from Gehenna. It sets fire to the whole wheel of creation. So it's about as devastating as it comes. People know you by how you talk, basically. I mean, they can watch you and govern your actions, but they know you best and most quickly by what you say. And the tongue reaches beyond the mouth to perhaps stain the whole body. It touches the whole network of people who are touched by you. And gossip, rumors, slander, false accusations, and so on, evil speech can stain and pollute and destroy a whole family, a whole group of people. And oftentimes, there's only a little, if any, truth in it. Mark 7, verse 20 says that which comes out of the man defiles him. Mark 7, verse 20. We've often read this in a different context. Speaking of those who want to say that anything is clean, but he says, that which comes out of the man, that defiles the man, for from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornicators, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, proud foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile the man. And so, we know that out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. Blessing and cursing. The Bible says, why the same mouth, say like the Pharisees, could praise Yahweh in one instance and curse Messiah in another just doesn't make a lot of sense. I always think of Peter, who says, you are the Messiah, the living Elohim. I mean, he was always right out front, stand-up guy, out front and honest. And yet, in a few weeks later, he's venomously denying that he knows Yahshua even, who he is, who he exists, that he even knows him. It doesn't make sense. The same mouth. Paul spoke glorious, wondrous truths, And then in Acts 23, he curses the high priest, calls him a whited wall. And then he apologizes for it. Everybody is subject to these faults. We have to watch ourselves from the same mouth. My mouth, your mouth, the mouth of all of us, comes blessings and cursings, and we have to be careful. Any profane speech is inconsistent. It's unacceptable. It's compromise. Yahweh wants us transformed into the image of Yahshua the Messiah. And Yahshua was perfect in all that he said and did. A true believer is known by his speech. There are so many ways we can offend by our mouths. There's so many ways we can offend in the law. We can tell half-truths. We can denigrate. We can harass. We can unfairly criticize. We can even boast. Make light of something serious. Whatever it might be, there's so many ways we can offend. And so, we continue on in James 3 and with this understanding that it's very important that we know what's going on. Verse 7, for every kind of beasts and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and has been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. No man can tame it. Yahweh certainly can through the power of his spirit. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Wherewith bless we Elohim, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of Elohim. And it doesn't make any sense, does it? Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine figs. So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descended not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. Verse 17, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in the peace of them that make peace. By the same token, our tongues can not only cause damage, untold damage, but they can be used to heal, to lift up, to edify. We're encouraged to do that. It's one of the gifts of the Spirit is to edify the brethren, and that's important. So many good works and expressions that can heal and encourage. Just, you know, it doesn't take much effort. It's free. We can encourage one another so easily, and yet sometimes we just fail to do so. And we could have done it and, you know, like they say, made someone's day. Whichever is in your heart will sooner or later come out. Sooner or later it will be expressed. And each time, our heart is revealed. So let's remember this, and let's remember that each of us has this duty. Each of us has a need to overcome. And part of that overcoming is to watch that unruly member, the one that so easily can cause damage, but at the same time can so easily encourage and incite good in our brethren and in society as a whole, as we be an example to all those we meet in what we say, what we do, and especially what we say. May Yahweh bless you.